All right, let's get right to it. The Hal Gibson Morning Show returns. It's 10 o'clock East Coast time, 10:06, actually 7:06 on the Pacific Coast, and you can do the math if you're anywhere else. I do, with great pleasure, welcome my friend Barry Lynn, the president of – what's the right term, Barry? You see, I'm so bad with titles. You are
the founder of Energy United. In Britain, so it's okay. No, I'm the executive director.
Executive director. That's good. That's a good title. The executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and we have been longtime associates and friends. I just want to thank you, Barry, for another wonderful evening at your home. You have these concerts now on an annual basis and around the country. And you introduced my wife Mindy and me to four, because two last year and two last year, just outstanding artists. And what a really just lovely evening. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate that. I always appreciate both of you coming. And I'll tell you, this is something that we do as a fundraiser for Americans United for Separation of Church and State, because we found so many comedians and singer-songwriters are fans of what we do and of the basic construct of keeping a decent distance between government and religion. And so we have more planned for the rest of for our new season that begins in October. But we've had 3 years of really fine help from a lot of reasonably well-known people.
Well, Cheryl Wheeler was the headliner, and then special guest Rachel Kilgorn. The talent is just astonishing. And for somebody who, you know, my kids listen to pop music and stuff and rock, and some of it I really enjoy, but the talent is so deep. In other words, what you listen to on the radio is, A, the tip of the iceberg of who's talented out there, and often may not reflect, and I think it was clear on set, last Saturday night, that many of our most talented artists are not very well known.
No, it's true, and of course, with the death of record stores and the death of CDs, it's more and more difficult to find these talented people. There's so many young people out there between, say, 20 and 35 who are spectacular, and you saw one, Rachel Kilgore, this weekend. But she, too, is the tip of an iceberg of an enormous talent that goes on all over the United States, and we've been very lucky to garner their attention, their interest, and their willingness to help us raise a few dollars.
And if you want to help, go to AU.org, and you can join Americans United. You can donate right there at AU.org. The Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director, with us. Barry, several stories in the news I want you to comment on, but let's start with Liberty University. Obviously, Liberty University in the news because Bernie Sanders was invited to and spoke there just a couple of days ago, but you were there last week. So what were you doing at the belly of the beast, if you will? You're for the separation of church and state, and they're for the welding together of church and state. They invited you. You spoke there. Tell us about it.
They did. Yeah, they did. When the late Jerry Falwell was the president, of course, one of his sons is now the president, but he would never invite me to do anything. And in fact, once on the late and unlamented for some Crossfire program, Bob Novak, who was the host at the time, asked Falwell if I could come down there and preach. And Falwell said something like, "I wouldn't let Barry Lynn preach on a street corner," which shocked even Novak. But now that Jerry's gone, times have changed a little bit, and the student group on campus invited me to have a debate with Matt Staver. Matt Staver was the dean of the Liberty University Law School. Well, we debated in the Supreme Court room, which is an exact replica of the United States Supreme Court, with the exception it has the Ten Commandments painted on each of the doors, something which, of course, is not happening at the United States Supreme Court. And we debated the meaning of religious liberty and whether Supreme Court decisions recently had defiled that very concept. I, of course, said absolutely not. Matt Staver, who is the representative, people who listen may see him on television because he's also the lawyer for Kim Davis, the woman in Kentucky who will not sign marriage licenses for same-sex couples. So Staver and I did. At one point, Staver said, "You know, Barry, and I have a very distinct world view. And in many ways that's correct, because I don't think that my own Christian worldview is what's supposed to direct the courts of the United States. Mr. Staver and Ms. Davis apparently do. The Constitution's the Constitution. The Bible is the Bible. The Quran is the Quran. We make rational judgments based on the commonly shared values in the Constitution, unencrusted by anybody's holy word.
There was a great question that was asked of Kim Davis' supporter, and I can't remember who it was, it was a Republican candidate, Huckabee, who was asked this question, and I'm sure it came up in your conversation with Matt Staver, which is, if you're going to say that a government clerk, you know, somebody who's acting under color of law, can deny a marriage license because she doesn't like the fact that the applicants are of the same sex, then what is to stop her from denying a marriage license to herself, or from someone else denying it to her because she's already been divorced? And certainly in the Catholic religion, she can't be married to somebody else until she's had that annulled. So there's no distinction. Yeah. Did Staver address that point in any kind of, satisfactory way in your view?
No, he didn't. And although I did give him some hypotheticals, and in the case of Kim Davis and her checkered past, I try to leave that out. So I didn't bring up the fact that she is divorced on several occasions, remarried. But it's a very good question, and I have yet to hear a satisfactory answer. There are times when people say, wait a minute, what about if it's a mixed race couple? I mean, one's black, one's white, but and somebody won't do that. The only good thing to come out of a Supreme Court case recently, the Hobby Lobby case, which was a terrible decision that asserted that certain corporations not only have free speech rights, that's bad enough, but that they have religious exercise rights as well. But the one thing that decision said was you cannot use religious beliefs to trump two things, paying taxes or not obeying race discrimination laws or anti-race discrimination laws. So I think it would be a hard case to make. I did ask him about this issue of race discrimination. I said, notwithstanding what the court said, if 20 years ago, actually it's a little longer now, when Loving versus Virginia in the early 70s came to the Supreme Court, the question of whether the state of Virginia could bar a marriage between an African American and a white person, the Supreme Court said they could not do that. But before that, there was authority claimed by some preachers in the South, including Bob Jones of the rather infamous Bob Jones University, who would not allow couples of opposite, different races to actually date on the campus. He lost his tax exemption because of that. He sued, went to the United States Supreme Court, and lost there as well. But there was authority cited by many of these preachers, everything from the God separated the light from the darkness statement. I know that sounds bizarre, but in the book of Genesis, on to various scriptural citations, including in the book of Acts, and that people have interpreted, I obviously think falsely and erroneously, to permit the segregation, if not demand the segregation of races throughout the world.
Yeah, it's really, religion can be a force for good, as you point out. It can also be, tragically, a force for terrible evil as well. And you are part at Americans United, by the way, Executive Director Barry Lynn with us on the morning show, Reverend Barry Lynn. I noticed when I was at your house, you've got this new campaign up, which I think is designed to protect people. We just talked about how religion can do harm. Religious belief, religious zealotry, religious leaders can do harm. You want to protect people from that harm. What is Protect Thy Neighbor all about, Barry?
Yeah, Protect Thy Neighbor is a campaign to fight back against the people who would use religion to harm other people. Whether you're a person who provides wedding services, who has decided you won't provide food, chairs, a venue, a photography experience to people because they are of the same gender, that this is not appropriate, this is not fair, this is not a good use, a morally or legally appropriate use to deny services to anyone and to hurt them and to hurt their very dignity. So this is what it's about. If people go to our website, they can see some of the pictures that we have up of people, famous and otherwise, holding up a whiteboard that says, I want to protect my neighbor because, and then people fill in very interesting things. And in fact, at the concert you mentioned, we had a woman who is a well-known Wiccan activist, pagan activist in the D.C. area, who was there and whose answer to that, why she wants to protect, is because, as she says, I remember the burning times, which is the phrase many pagans use to describe the burning of witches in Europe. So this Sarah Silverman was kind enough to do one of those when she did an event for us. Liz Winstead, who folks may know from MSNBC, one of the head writers and creators of the original Daily Show with Jon Stewart, she did one. And we're continuing to urge individuals to do this as a way to download the little form and then to post it, and then we rotate through them on the web page. So we really... Fundamentally, we're also looking for clients who need our assistance on some of these cases. We represented six couples in Alabama during the fight down there when so many of those law clerks would not sign marriage licenses. We represent to this day the only woman in any of the contraceptive mandate cases where the Notre Dame University doesn't refuse to take lots of government money, tax dollars from everyone, but it does refuse not only to cover contraceptive insurance for its students and for its employees, but even to sign a paper. I know this sounds bizarre. Sign a paper asserting that their conscience does not permit them to provide this, which then under the Affordable Care Act requires the government to find someone to provide that coverage for free, and most insurance companies are happy to do that, but they will not, Notre Dame will not even sign a paper. When you think about this, Hal, you and I are old enough to remember or to have known people during the Vietnam War who wanted to be conscientious objectors to war. At the time, you had to be conscientiously opposed to war in any form. You had to virtually sign, not just sign a paper, you had to write a treatise about why you deserved this classification. In the case of Notre Dame, Little Sisters of the Poor, all the other groups that have refused to sign this document, it's, I believe, 787 words. All you have to say is, I won't do this. You don't have to explain why. You don't have to have a theological reason why. You just say, I can't do it. They won't even sign those papers. We have so far successfully beaten that argument in federal court, and about six other federal courts have also rejected this ridiculous premise that you can't, that you can not be forced, they say, to even assert that you conscientiously object to something that you're required to do. I don't get it. I mean, literally, nobody has bought it. No court has accepted it, but that doesn't mean it won't be on the way to the United States Supreme Court in the near future.
All right, Barry, let's just move on. I also wanted you to talk a little bit, and we definitely want to get to your take, and we're not going to endorse anybody. You can't do that as your organization is
sure.
Tax exempt. But I do want your take on the state of the primaries in both for both parties, but you do have a book out as well you want to mention to listeners, and if they're interested in, they can get Conversations with Great Minds at AU.org as well. Tell us about your new book.
Yeah, the new book is God and Government. It's kind of an insider's view. It doesn't purport to be a history of the last 25 years, but I have been involved in almost every major church-state issue over the last quarter century, and frankly, this was an effort to tell a story by an activist, me, about the way I see events unfold. It's not a Let Us All Despair book. It basically argues there are some issues, at least in the courts, that are kind of out of the courts, that nobody's trying to object as a legal matter to evolution. That doesn't mean everybody believes the evidence is there for it. We don't have many school prayer cases. What we have to do with those issues is make sure nobody's trying to sneak creationism into a biology class or sneak some kind of prayer into a public school. But essentially, these are legal non-starters. Then there are some big issues that have unfortunately gotten worse, not better lately. But then the other piece of good news is that millennials, people between 20 and 30, have remarkably different views about many of these social issues and church-state issues than their parents or grandparents did. The only problem there is they don't vote. 21% of millennials voted in the midterm elections. Had they voted in anything close to the percentages that their grandparents did in that same election, the United States Senate would look a lot different than it does today. So it's not despair. But the two big issues, the faith-based initiative started by George Bush, continued and even expanded by President Obama, still allows religious organizations that get government grants and contracts to discriminate in hiring the people in the very programs that are getting tax dollars.
It's just terrible. It's unacceptable.
You can put up a sign, no Jews need apply.
Yeah, it's like we live in it's theocratic. There's no question about it. By the way, the book,
it is.
God and Government, I said Conversations with Great Minds because Tom Hartman interviewed you as part of his Conversations with Great Minds, and I think that's very fair to so refer to you. So we're lucky to have a great mind with us right now, Barry Lynn. The book, though, God and Government. And, Barry, we don't have that much time. Let's pivot from your statement about millennials to the campaigns for president. And I did see, and we might as well start with Bernie Sanders. He was at Liberty University just a couple of days ago. I did see him in Manassas when he spoke that night.
Yep.
And lots of millennials. You know, it was a very young crowd. And on the one hand, we can take comfort and say, that's great. That suggests that this guy, that millennials, without endorsing anybody, millennials are getting more involved. But if you're a Sanders supporter, it could also be a double-edged sword. You might say, well, these folks might come out to see him if they got nothing else to do on a Monday night, but will they go to the polls?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Jack London, who was a well-known writer, wrote Call of the Wild and a lot of books that were a bit more serious than that. But he was also, he was a socialist. He wasn't a democratic socialist like Bernie Sanders is. He was a socialist. He used to get huge crowds in San Francisco, and he got so many people to come and hear him that he thought, I should run for mayor, which he did, and he didn't even come close to winning the election. So sometimes you are right. People with nothing else to do on a Monday night, maybe they're not football fans, they might come out to see Bernie Sanders in Manassas. The truth is, they might not come out to vote. But this is the most extraordinary political season I have ever lived through. To see Bernie Sanders doing as well, being ahead slightly in the polls in New Hampshire and in the Iowa caucuses, that is something that many of us would not have predicted. The decline of Hillary Clinton's popularity, even among Democratic-leaning women, that's a big surprise. And the fact that Joe Biden may still enter the race. And this isn't an endorsement either, but, I mean, somebody at that concert asked me, if you had to predict who would be the next president of the United States, who would it be? And I said, I think it will be Joe Biden, because I do think he'll get into the race, and I do think that he can readily beat any of the people who look like they could come from even from behind in the Republican primary, notwithstanding tonight's debate, which everyone will watch for possibly comic relief sometimes. But it's there, too. Who would expect that a Donald Trump, who managed to insult, and again, not an endorsement or an opposition statement, but the guy has insulted women, he has insulted Hispanics, he has no answers on any questions. Last night's discussion on national security was mainly another screed against immigration, but no matter what he says, he still rises in the polls. Ben Carson, a gentle person who doesn't, but an outsider, no elective office, is rising. We'll see what happens after tonight's debate. But people like Jeb Bush, who were assumed to be the people who come out at the top, he and Governor Walker, anti-union Governor Walker, they're just falling apart.
Yeah, you mentioned Scott Walker. He's in the low single digits, I believe. I actually did think he would very possibly emerge from the scrum as the Republican candidate, so I'm not disappointed at all in his fall from grace. The problem is, I think if you're sort of a reality-based guy like me, and I know you can't endorse anybody, you look at the Republicans and you're always happy that a lot of them are doing badly, but you're equally upset that several of them are doing quite well. So it kind of gives you both hope and at the same time despair. Barry, which do you find more implausible, Trump's rise or Sanders' rise, and which of the two, or perhaps both, do you think could be the next candidate or the next president?
Well, I must say that I do find Donald Trump's rise to be incredibly confusing, implausible. You know, Walt Disney had this phrase called the plausible impossible. That was like when one of those cartoon characters would run to the edge of a cliff and then run past it and then realize it was off.
And then they'd run back.
And run back.
Right.
Plausible impossibility. Donald Trump, as you know, tried to run for president last election cycle, got absolutely nowhere. Now he's at the top of the pack in every single poll, and there are a few polls, at least against Senator Clinton, where he's
either tied, basically it's a dead heat. In fact, you mentioned Biden. Democrats who want to win the White House and don't care who their candidate is, I think probably are looking very closely at Biden and hoping he enters, because at least when the pre-announcement Biden, and Barry, we've seen polls, you know, that announcement, it's kind of like Heisenberg's law. Once you announce, it changes the dynamic. So it's quite possible that his numbers might drop, or they could even rise if he announces that he's running. That would be Joe Biden. All right, before we let you go, just a minute or two left, we thank you so much. By the way, the book, God.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Barry, always great to talk to you. Executive Director of Americans United, AU.org. You listen to the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show, by the way, at halginsberg.com. The book, God and Government, at AU.org. Also, their campaign, Protect My Neighbor, Protect Thy Neighbor, at Americans United as well. You're so busy. You're doing so much, Barry. I'm really impressed, as always. Writing books especially, I think. I have enough trouble reading a book, much less writing one.
No.
I don't know how you do that. Barry, I don't know if you've heard about this. Let me just throw this at you. Have you heard about the I guess it's, is it negative campaigning or I don't know what the right word is, where David Brock's group has sent out an email criticizing Bernie Sanders. And I would think you would find that problematic. I mean, if we're trying to defeat Republicans, why are we you know, sort of slurring each other?
Yeah, I don't. David Brock, of course, has a kind of colorful background. He was the person who wrote the book The Real Anita Hill. Was responsible, I think, more than any other single human being for making sure that Clarence Thomas got on the United States Supreme Court. He did have a change of heart, admitted that a lot of the stuff he said about Anita Hill was false, and is now a kind of a darling of left-of-center people for running a group called Media Matters. You know, he has the right, under the tax status that he has, to do anything he wants. If he wants to attack Bernie Sanders, he's permitted to do that. On the other hand, there are people who are not permitted to take positions, like churches. Another thing, sadly, the Obama administration has not done. They have not cracked down on what is obviously illegal campaign activity on the part of churches, left, right, and center, but mainly right, telling you who to vote for in primaries and in the general election. They have done nothing to change it. It requires a change of a single sentence. I believe most of your listeners are probably aware of the comment, if you put an infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters in a room, eventually they will type at random all the works of Shakespeare. This is one sentence. You put five monkeys in with a modern word processor, they would have rewritten the sentence. They could start investigating religious organizations and endorse candidates, and they'd probably be through at least one act of Hamlet by now.
You know, you make such a great point. I hadn't even thought of it that way, but that is such a really powerful point you just made, Barry, because Brock's groups are tax exempt, and yet somehow he's allowed to work for a candidate.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know if Media Matters may have something called a C4, which is allowed to do some campaign advocacy, but a C3.
Well, they don't. Actually, they don't do that because I interview Media Matters folks and they will not endorse any candidate. All they do is present the videos and radio audio from the right wing, which I think is a valuable service. I mean, I praise Brock for doing that. I think it was a good idea. In fact, it was one I had before he did, or at least before he started Media Matters. I actually had a website called Watch on the Right, which was exactly the same idea, but I didn't have the millions that he had to implement it. And I praise him for it. He did a good job with it, no question about it. But he's working with this super PAC as well, and they coordinate with the candidate. And he's got his offices for the super PAC, which is Correct the Record, right across the hall in the same building for Media Matters. So it does seem something really weird there, you know, going on, that they do have the tax-exempt status, and yet he can clearly work out in the open for her or attack another candidate.
That's very interesting because I always enjoy talking to you, Hal, because I learned something too. We will look into this very matter because if all of this is accurate and if this is in fact being run in coordination with a candidate, then it's probably doubly illegal.
Yeah, look into it. And you know what? Get back.
We'll check into it.
I want you to get back to me. The Washington Post has done some good work on this too, where they had an article where they said the two of them actually do plan strategy, Hillary Rodham Clinton and David Brock. Now, of course, newspapers get things wrong, too, but they were pretty specific, so it does seem probable. Hey, Barry, listen, I know you got books to write. You got campaigns to run. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll see you next year, if not before, at your next house party.
Thanks. All right. Terrific. Thanks, Hal. Bye-bye.
Great talking to Barry Lynn, the Reverend from Americans United, the executive director there, AU.org. And I'll tell you what, let's do our break as we always do that break thing. And I wanted to get your labor. I wonder if Workers Independent News not working. I wonder if they're just off because their website's down. Here's
the Media Matters.
Media Matters.
On Fox and Friends Sunday, Tucker Carlson and his fellow co-hosts voiced their concern that Stephen Colbert wore a Black Lives Matter wristband on his show, continuing Fox News' pattern of attempting to conflate the Black Lives Matter movement and anti-police violence. Here's Carlson.
So it's possible he's so, you know, rich, famous, celebrity guy, so totally out of touch he doesn't fully understand what that represents. But here's my concern. Obviously, Stephen Colbert is a talented character. But there's also a strain of self-righteousness in his comedy. I don't think do you really want to get into this your first week on the air, diving face first into the most divisive social movement in America? It's the idea behind all the groups, and that is that you divide people on the basis of their skin color and say this one group of people's lives matter. Everybody's life matters.
Earlier this month, Vox blasted Fox News for pushing the myth that Black Lives Matter endorses violence against police officers, saying that the network is trying to blame the movement for inciting, quote, violence against police and civilians, despite a, quote, lack of evidence. For more on this and other stories, visit MediaMatters.org.
All right, markets, the Dow's up 31 to 16,631. NASDAQ is flat at 4861. S&P 500's up 4 to 1982. Gold's up $15 an ounce to 1118. Oil is up $1.17 a barrel at $45.78. And I'll be right back on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. All right, back on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show at 10:35 East Coast, 7:35 Pacific. We'll be joined by Catholic Jack in just about a half hour, And there's some recent comments by and about the Pope, very positive. I want him to weigh in on, and some other religious stories as well. Big deal. 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. Great conversation with Barry Lynn. I'll be posting that at the website at healthginsburg.com in the archives section. So again, if you missed any of the Barry Lynn interview or you want to go over it again, please go to healthginsburg.com in the archives section. And when I say great interview, I mean Barry. I don't mean I did such a great job, but it was really always a joy to speak to Barry. I think a lot of times I do good interviews, but he's easy. You know, he just, you ask him a question, he gives you a great answer. So that wasn't a real toughie for me. I want to get right back to this Clinton-Sanders situation. She scares me. Okay, she really does. Is this who you want? Seriously, do you think she's going to be a progressive champion, a liberal champion? Is she going to be one?
America, I was really excited. I get there, first thing, new Republican president wants a huge tax cut. You know, remember that? So I said, look, I'm a senator now. I get to express myself. I said, we can have a moderate tax cut. You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty. I think sometimes...
Right. Okay, Bush, I'll give you a little bit of a tax cut. You know what, Bush? I'll give you a little bit of authority to go into Iraq. I know you'll take it just the right way. You're not going to do anything too crazy, are you? Unbelievable. Is she the person you want for your press? I just... 844-4-HELL-G, is the negativity that David Brock has thrown, is that going to work? Is it going to help Hillary? 844-367-4254. I'm just so disgusted by this. It's so upsetting to me. David, now, one of the things you got to push back on, one of the arguments that you hear from the right a lot is that she didn't do anything wrong with emails. It's a non-story. And a lot of liberals don't really want to go on about it because Republicans have made so much of it, especially the falsehoods about Benghazi, the trumped-up stories, the fake stories. But that said, Hillary was wrong. She should not have used a private server. And this is the conversation with, who is it with? David Brock. With Joe Scarborough, and he just nails Brock. Let me just play a little bit of this. This is yesterday, I believe, 2 days ago. 2 days ago, Morning Joe. And Brock is so absurd that Mika starts laughing at him. Why is this important? Again, there's no self-reflection. There's no willingness to admit error. It's a sign. Clinton said, I apologize. But then she said, I didn't do anything wrong. Does her surrogate help her out? Does he say, maybe she shouldn't have used that private server? Brock and Scarborough and Brzezinski.
To foreign leaders, you don't know what emails in and out.
Let me ask you.
But again, though, the regulation is clear. And they're supposed to back it up, and they're supposed to back it up by
what had to do with war. That's the employee. Every employee in the government has a decision to make to classify work-related or personal. What's government property?
And if they follow the 2009 regulation, and they actually,
which she did,
no, she didn't, and they contained it because she didn't contain it in the State Department.
That's it right there. She didn't preserve it in the State Department. He just contained. That's exactly right. Scarborough is exactly right. Rule required her to preserve her emails in the State Department's record-keeping system. It's that simple. It's so incredibly simple. And she did not preserve the emails, the government-related emails, in the State Department's record-keeping system, NARA, they call it, National Archives and Records Act, or Records Administration. That's within the U.S. government. And NARA is at all the different agencies, National Archives, Recordation, whatever, Act. But that's what it's called, NARA. Let me tell you what that means. And in any event, the rule says you must preserve Yeah, National Archives and Records Administration Act, NARA. You must, this is why I guess what I said, you must preserve them at your agency. Now, we know she didn't preserve them at her agency because they were on the server in her house. And when you hear Brock's his defense, oh, well, she sent emails to her associates in the State Department, so those were preserved. Well, maybe, but that's not the point. Some of them were, I guess. But what about the emails to Cindy Blumenthal? What about the emails to outside the State Department? They weren't preserved at the State Department. She broke the rule, and she can't admit it, and her surrogate refuses to admit it. Her skill. This is not somebody with a temperament to be president.
It's just a matter of fact. You're not even entitled to that opinion.
Yeah, there was no real-time archiving.
So now this is it. There was no real-time. Okay, so yeah, you're right. She didn't keep them. She didn't preserve them at state. I'll grant you that. But there was no real-time. She just sort of had to preserve them at some point in the future. Do you buy that? She never preserved them at state. Ever. Do you buy that? And there was no real-time requirement? Sounds like wordsmithing to me.
2009 law.
They were supposed to.
They ended up there because she printed up a bunch of them and sent them over. This is who they are. They can't even just admit facts are facts.
She turned them over.
She turned them over.
Look, Mika's laughing.
90% of them were there all along.
90%? Does the law state, well, you only have to keep 90%? You only have to preserve 90%? By the way, that hair is the worst hair I've ever seen, if you see this video.
Communicated with people on the state gov accounts.
Okay. 90%. So what about the ones?
Okay. No, 90% of them probably were not there all along. We don't know what other emails she sent out. We don't know what emails she sent to foreign leaders.
It's bingo. It's just, and they just go back and forth. But it gets so frustrating and irritating. And the only answer is don't support Clinton. You can't trust her. You can't trust her lackey. You can't trust her surrogate. You can't trust her shell. And then they're going to go negative. She's going to go negative. She's going to go negative because she can't win otherwise. Don't let her win now. Don't let her win now.
I get there. First thing, new Republican president wants a huge tax cut. You know, remember that? So I said, look, I'm a senator now. I get to express myself. I said, we could have a moderate tax cut. You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty.
All right. We have a moderate tax cut for the rich, just not a huge tax cut for the rich. She doesn't deserve to be president. She's not the right person. In these times, she should not be our next president. She should not be the Democratic nominee. It's time for a change. Feel the burn. I'm Hal Ginsberg. You're listening to my show, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. You know, I have been bashing and smashing and crushing. Those are all different expressions. I guess he needs to beat somebody up. Brock. But let me give him a little bit of credit. And this is not, I'm not being facetious. I'm not being sarcastic. I saw this ad that Priorities USA did for Clinton. And you know what? It is a really good, it's a darn good ad. So I want to play it for you because when Clinton focuses on the Republicans, which is exactly – and Brock, when he focuses on Republicans, he does a pretty good job. He really does. And why do I say that? He's good at the negative stuff, right? That's where he kind of shines, is when he's beating up people, when he's attacking them. And he does that at Media Matters extremely well. When he, all he does is play the clips, play the audio, show the video of the righty haters. And it's incredibly effective. This is a great spot by his group, Priorities USA.
It's morning again in America.
Sadly, the American dream is dead.
Today, more men and women will go to work than ever before in our country's history.
people need to work longer hours.
I don't think the minimum wage law works.
They just got really lame ideas, things like the minimum wage.
This afternoon, 6,500 young men and women will be married.
I don't think I've ever used the word gay rights.
You think being gay is a choice?
Absolutely.
Why do you say that?
Because a lot of people who go into prison straight, and when they come out, they're gay.
And with inflation at less than half of what it was just 4 years ago, they can look forward with confidence to the future.
We need to increase the retirement age.
We need to figure out a way to phase out this program.
These programs actually weakened us as a people.
It's morning again.
Let me just stop it there for one sec, because you just heard Rubio say that, Marco Rubio, that these programs hurt us as a country. He's talking about Medicare and Medicaid. So this is a remarkably powerful spot. I'm a little bit more than halfway through it, where you're juxtaposing where I guess Brock, it's his group priorities, or maybe he's not part of it anymore. He had been. Maybe he left it. I'm not sure. But it's the kind of thing he would do. It's what he would do, because he always goes to, you know, shows you the video, shows you the audio, people saying things, and then you know, so you know what they really stand for. They can't hide behind, you know, platitudes. This is the exact words. And he has like a different morning in America. It's kind of to juxtapose the optimism, the supposed sunny optimism of the Reagan years with the really the dark darkness, the cruelty, the meanness in the Republican Party. And you heard there Marco Rubio say, these programs make us weaker, meaning Medicare and Medicaid, meaning taking care of people who are poor, who are hungry, who are old, and making sure they have health care, because that's what those programs are for seniors and for the less advantaged, the disadvantaged children. He says that makes us weaker. I thought when we help people who need assistance, who need help, that makes us stronger
in America.
You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals.
Well, I'm not sure we need a $500 million for women's health issues.
Don't favor a rape and an incest exception.
I have never said that, and I have never advocated that.
Our country is prouder.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
I'm for profiling. I'm a lot more concerned about checking people out that make me nervous.
That's John Kasich saying he's for profiling. So the kind of the kinder, gentler Republican. Now let's stop everybody if they look different than we do. Let's profile them.
Why would we ever want to return to where we were?
And there's another take in there that I thought was really interesting when Jeb Bush says, and I missed it when it went through, but I'm sure he said it, but where Jeb Bush says that we need to work harder. That's a problem. If people, we need to, no, and it's not even work harder, it's we need to raise the retirement age. Isn't that amazing? People work until they're 65, 66, 67. Oh, no, we have to raise the retirement age. They shouldn't be getting Social Security then. They get it when they're 70, 72. Unbelievable. 844-4-HELG, if you want to join me, 844-367-4254. Maybe I don't give credit to Brock for that, because I think he's no longer part of Priorities USA, just correct the record. And so that's fine, because I don't particularly want to give Brock credit. On the other hand, even if he wasn't part of the production of that spot, it is kind of his, yeah, he resigned in February. But even still, you know, it's the way he would do it, where he just simply gives you the actual words and statements of the Republicans, and that's good. He's honest. That's honest. But his attack on Sanders is just fake. It's phony. Oh, we're going to link him to Hugo Chavez. We're going to link him to Hamas. We're going to link him to Jeremy Corbyn. Kind of nonsense. Kind of counterproductive crap is that? He's carrying water for the Republican Party. He's carrying water for the conservative movement. It's disgraceful.
We need to increase the retirement age.
We need to figure out a way to phase out this program.
These programs.
All right, so it was actually Chris Christie who was saying we need to raise the retirement age, but Bush has said similar things as well. It's scary. you can understand, can't you, why Emily Blunt is saying, you know, I don't, this whole American thing. I watch those Republicans, not so great. All right, 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. Catholic Jack coming up in a moment. Big story, and this is, there's going to be a protest down in front of the Democratic National Committee this afternoon for more debates. There's a lot of pressure now on the Democrats to have more than four debates before the Iowa caucuses. The second Republican debate is tonight. Is it the second or the – I guess it's the second, right? So they've already had two. People are kind of, I guess, a little bit worked up to see the Republicans argue with each other, to see a food fight. We're not seeing anything on the Democratic side. Politico has a really good story about this. By the way, again, before I get to the Politico story, if you are interested, if you want to fight for more debates, there will be a protest today outside the Democratic National Committee in downtown D.C., pressure the committee, and specifically Debbie Wasserman Schultz, to add more debates. Politico has a really good take on that. I'm going to get to it in just a second. But from 4:30 to 6 this evening at the Democratic National Committee headquarters, 4:30 South Capitol Street, Southeast, there's going to be a protest there. A loud debate. That is the group called Allow. That's what the group is called. It's protesting Allow Debate. And I think they're, you know, spot on. Of course there should be more debates. There's no question about it. Martin O'Malley, I guess he's the third, you know, he's number three on the Democratic side in terms of support. Right now it goes Clinton, Sanders, and then O'Malley. And O'Malley has been the one most outspoken in favor of more debates. And Bernie was asked about this. And I would have thought Bernie would want more debates, but he said something very, very interesting. He said, or his top strategist, Tad Devine, said about more debates before the Iowa caucuses, when you get into these political debates about debates, stop communicating about issues that affect the lives of people, and you begin to communicate about things that people in Washington obsess about. It's nothing against O'Malley. We join him in calling for more debates. That's our position. But are we going to have a sit-down in the DNC lobby? No. So basically, I think what Sanders is saying is, look, we're making our case. We're speaking to the American people. We are going from state to state, city to city. We are having our rallies. We feel comfortable that our message is getting out there. And so we don't need to have the debates. Now, do we think there should be more? Yeah, we do. It would be better. But we don't think it's essential. And, of course, O'Malley, who is way, way behind both Clinton and Sanders, and, by the way, Biden as well, if he were in the race, obviously he needs somewhere, somehow, to be able to present his message to as many people as he can. He's not drawing big crowds like Sanders. He doesn't have the name recognition that Clinton has. So he's saying we should all be on the stage together. Well, I think he's right. You know, I get the Sanders view. They don't want to spend time and energy fighting with Wasserman Schultz. I understand that. I think that they're wrong on this. I think they should be front and center demanding more debates. Now, the problem is you start to look like a whiner, right? You look a little bit whiny. So you have to do it in a way that's you know, makes you look strong, not weak. And I think the best way to do it is the way O'Malley has done. He says, hey, this is hurting the Democratic Party. By the way, that's what that's what Sanders has said, too. It's hurting our brand because people aren't hearing us together, aren't seeing us on stage. Also, you make the point, we're so much more intelligent than the Republicans. We have real solutions. We care about people. It'll all be on display. I think that they're right. The political argument, really the article outstanding, politico.com, Hillary DNC faced pressure to add debates, and that's by Gabriel would be a woman. I think it's Gabriel De Benedetti, and it was posted this morning, 5:25 Eastern Time. So what De Benedetti says is that Wasserman Schultz is getting a lot of heat, right, because most people say we need more debates. And you shouldn't let Clinton duck debates. But Wasserman Schultz, although she won't tell you this, apparently someone was in De Benedetti's ear and said the problem for her was that Clinton didn't want even four debates, that Clinton wanted like two debates. Clinton wanted as few debates as possible. She did not want to be on stage with the other candidates. She saw herself as the prohibitive frontrunner, and she could only lose by more exposure. I think she was wrong there, because even if it might have at that moment seemed like a bad idea to expose herself to, candidates like Sanders and O'Malley, who are better, have better messages, whose positions, whose policies resonate better with the American public, I still think it would have been in her interest, only for this reason, to expose people to her before the general, if she does win, if she did win. Expose more people to her. Get ready for the debate with the Republicans. Set out your positions. Don't come in as a cipher. And I understand people say, well, she's no cipher. We've known her for years. Do people really know her? She's so good at nuancing and avoiding answers. Get them out there. Stake your claim. Whatever you are you a Republican? Are you a conservative? Are you a conservative Democrat? Are you a moderate? Are you a center? Are you a progressive as you said you were? What are you? It would have helped her. One other point, maybe it wouldn't have. Maybe it wouldn't have helped her in this regard. I think it would have helped her for the general. It might have hurt her in the Democratic primaries. She had such a big lead, she probably figured she'd win no matter what. But maybe not. Maybe more primaries will seal her fate. And you know, if I'm Hillary Clinton, then I say, I would think, if you love America, you say, yeah, well, I've had a great run. You know, I was first lady. I was a senator from the Empire State, great state of New York. I was secretary of state. I've done incredible things. I was a partner at a law firm, went to Yale Law School. I really had accomplishments that most people could only dream about. I won't be president. It's too bad. But okay, I can live with that. The Democratic voters decided they liked somebody better. I think that would be so honorable if she could say that. But she's shown she doesn't have honor in her. She and David Brock planned the negative attacks against Bernie Sanders. She and David Brock refused to acknowledge that she used a private email server in direct violation of the federal rules governing the preservation of government records. It's sad, folks. And I know so many of her staunch supporters, her diehards, don't want to abandon her. But, you know, just as she has a duty to the American people that she's flouted, so do we as voters have a duty to choose the best candidate. It's not Mrs. Clinton. It is Mr. Sanders.
Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day.
It's Tuesday, September 15th, 2015.
This fire and many others that have burned this year have been very destructive, and there's no end in sight.
California's all-time record heat and drought explode into more record wildfires.
Oil has won a skirmish, but they've lost a bigger battle.
As the state succeeds in passing some, but not all, of its ambitious clean energy agenda. Plus, score one for the bees. Appeals court overturns EPA's approval of a bee-killing pesticide.
All of that buzz and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
While the Obama administration blames man and the burning of fossil fuels, there is not consensus.
And you know that's true because Fox News keeps telling you so over and over and over again. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, climate change comes home to California here again as we continue this endless, hot, and dry summer.
Yeah, I don't think this is what the Beach Boys meant when they talked about endless summer. First, California Governor Jerry Brown has declared a state of emergency after several fast-moving, massive, out-of-control wildfires in the region around Sacramento exploded in size over the weekend. As we go to air, 23,000 people have been evacuated, over 500 homes destroyed, at least one person killed, with several still unaccounted for. Cal Fire spokesman Dan Berlant, in an interview with CBS News, called these fires unprecedented.
What we're seeing here are extremely fast-moving wildfires. With a little bit of wind and the dry conditions, they have been enough to burn at explosive rates and have unprecedented amount of acres burned in such a short amount of time.
Eight firefighters have lost their own homes in the wildfires. Many residents said they barely escaped with their lives. California's state fire chief said these fires are spreading faster than they have ever seen in their careers amid California's record drought and its hottest year on record so far.
We have to truck in water from other areas. Our helicopters may have to fly further to get water. This fire and many others that have burned this year have been very destructive, and there's no end in sight.
And a new study finds California's drought is the worst in 500 years. Researchers at the University of Arizona put the current drought into historical context. They said that based on data from tree rings, the current drought is the driest California has been in at least 500 years. That's including snowfall in the Sierra Nevada mountains last winter that hit its lowest level in 500 years. In other words, the data shows the state hasn't been this dry since the days of Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, but there's no consensus on that, says Fox.
On the political front, in our last episode, we reported on how the oil industry's deceptive million-dollar ad campaign succeeded in killing off an ambitious provision in the California state legislature that would have cut the state's petroleum use. However, the oil industry could not kill the entire bill. California now has a new, official, legally binding goal of getting 50% of its electricity from renewable sources by 2030. The state is already halfway to that goal, and the legislation also sets a goal of doubling the energy efficiency of buildings with new incentives and revised building codes. Meanwhile, California Governor Jerry Brown said the battle with the oil industry has only intensified his resolve to ramp up California's leadership on climate change. On Monday, in a press conference about the wildfires, he said his climate change initiatives are not about burnishing his legacy, but about preparing for an uncertain future.
I wish it were if it were just about me, then it would be a very trivial problem. But it's really about you. It's about your children, and it's about the future of how our society is going to function. And what we're seeing in Europe now with mass migrations, that will happen in California. As the Central America, Mexico, as they warm, people are going to get on the move. And it's a real challenge.
People are going to get on the move. If you think the right-wingers are upset about people coming into this country now, just wait until climate change really takes hold down there.
Finally, score one for the Bees. In a major and almost unprecedented ruling, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has overturned the Environmental Protection Agency's approval of an insecticide that is part of a class of pesticides known to harm bees. The three-judge panel reversed the EPA's unlimited approval of the chemical called sulfoxaflor, made by Dow Chemical. The justices said the EPA's permit was based on flawed and limited data. They noted initial testing showed it was toxic to bees. According to agriculture policy experts, courts almost never overturn the EPA.
And I thought the EPA hates business, has a war on coal, has a war on chemicals, has a war on everything that Fox News loves.
Depends on who you're talking to, I guess.
Apparently so. For much more on those stories and all of the other ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can download our reports anytime via iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
beautiful Schubert there, Ave Maria. You know, Jack, I like having you on because, among other things, I get to play some classical music, which I do enjoy.
That's good, yeah. And,
very nice.
You know, but that wasn't me singing. That was somebody else.
Well, she's got a lot higher voice. You got that gravel in your voice. You sort of sound like, you've always had that. You sort of sound like Bernie Sanders. I saw him just two days ago. He had sort of a rasp, and I said I was really impressed. I got kind of scolded from some folks because I said I was impressed with the energy he showed as a 73-year-old. He was under the Kleegs for an hour, and he never wavered. He didn't falter. And he had previously appeared, this was on Monday, he previously appeared for a few hours at Liberty University, and then he had a three-hour drive, nearly 3 hours, from Liberty University in Lynchburg, which is sort of south central Virginia, north into Manassas. So some people said I shouldn't just assume an older person would have less energy. Man, I wouldn't have that much energy. Do you think that's ageist? I don't think it's ageist. People do slow down a little bit as they get older.
No, of course you slow down. I'm about to turn 60 here in a couple months, and I've slowed down.
It was really remarkable. The guy is so energized, so energetic. He did have, but one person pointed out his voice had gotten hoarse. I don't see that as losing energy. I just see that as losing your voice because you've been talking so much raising it.
I don't know. You know, when it comes to elections, people just try and pick at anything. And obviously people like to pick on you, so.
Oh, they always do. I am clearly a lightning rod. Are you impressed with Bernie? Do you think it was, what do you think of it? Well, you're here for religious reasons. You're the Catholic. Jack, we had an hour ago, we had the Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United. He's an Episcopal. You're a Catholic. What's your view on that? I mean, are you angry still about 1520 and then the schisms that erupted? You're a papist. You've sworn fealty to Rome. Do you have a kind of bitter anger that goes 500 years back to that, the religious wars?
I don't think I get angry about it. No, it's a sad development. It's what happens when politics and religion get mixed up too much, and that's what happened. But basically, the Reformation and the schisms before that were largely political in nature. Especially if you take a look at the first one, or the second one, between the Orthodox and the Catholic Church, you'll notice that the schism followed the lines between the Western and Byzantine Empire. So these things happen when princes and politics get involved and try to make the church something for themselves.
So what do you think about that? But not just the princes, but also the priests and the bishops and the cardinals. A lot of corruption in the Roman Catholic Church.
When you're talking about the Reformation, as far as the particular corruption that Martin Luther was complaining about, he had a legitimate point. But there's been Reformation in the church over and over again because of that tendency toward corruption.
Well, is that because people are human? We're human.
Yeah, right.
When we get power, we tend to become corrupt. So my
feeling is that Luther's Reformation was co-opted by princes, is my point. That's all.
Oh, no question.
These things.
No question.
Yeah.
Now, did you see any of Bernie Sanders' speech? Now, he went to the, evangelical. They're clearly not a Catholic, but they're Christian.
Right.
Were you impressed that Bernie went down there and spoke to this group that's, you know, pretty opposite of him in many ways in terms of the political views and religious views?
I thought so, and I thought it was a really good thing for him to do. He mentioned Pope Francis and during that time, and he also said that he wasn't Catholic, and he quoted from the Bible. And the thing is that there's different ways of that certain Protestants approach these things differently from Catholics, and so I'm not as familiar with Liberty University and how they approach some of the issues that Bernie Sanders brought up. When he mentioned Pope Francis, I don't know how that played in that crowd. And so, you know, I had to wonder if maybe he was looking at Christians as kind of a...
monolithic?
More monolithic than it actually
I don't think he was. Let me play, this is part of his... Yeah. Let me just play kind of the opening remarks, and I like your take. See if we... Well, that's got the problem here. I'm not hearing him. It's not good. Let me get rid of this limiter here. I think it's a problem here. See if we can get this, folks. Sorry about that. That's very frustrating, you know. We're not hearing him. See if we can...
Yeah.
Here we go. Well, he's still not coming in. And I don't get that. Well, we'll do what we can.
Just tell me what the remarks
were. Well, he just said that he wants to thank very much the folks for inviting him, and he wanted to acknowledge that there are some issues where they are not going to agree, specifically when it comes to gay marriage and the right to choose, but that there are many other areas where he believes that they can work together, such as helping poor people, helping kids, making sure everyone has health care who needs it. I thought that was very effective, and it seemed as though a lot of people responded positively.
I think that when it comes to the things that Bernie Sanders is for, and I'll just give you my response to that. I mean, obviously I'm pro-life. The Obergefell decision is pretty much put the same-sex marriage question to bed in this country.
You seem not to have strong feelings about that. Is that fair to say? I mean, you really are. You seem not to have strong feelings about same-sex marriage, marriage equality. You don't like. You're opposed to abortion. You think it's a sin, but I don't hear that same kind of anger. I don't hear the same vehemence in your talk when you discuss gay marriage, gay rights.
Well, you know, the reason for that is because it's behavior that doesn't harm anybody,
but
the participants, you know. So I mean, it's, I think when it and I was trying to keep my mouth shut about the issue. I thought that perhaps from the Christian side, perhaps we were approaching that particular issue with a certain level of wrongheadedness, simply because of the fact that we had. Because utilitarianism is something that has become an assumption in this society, and I thought that we were much better advised to start thinking in terms of what our rights were going to be, where our religious rights going to be respected in connection with that, vis-a-vis trying to prevent what was fast becoming the majority view. And I see that as distinct from abortion because of the fact that...
Because you see the unborn child as a life that needs to be protected, period.
Well, I just don't think that there's any other rational way of...
All right, ask you this. Staying away from abortion for a minute, because we never see eye to eye on that. With regard to the issue of the respecting the rights of religious folks who oppose same-sex marriage, does that mean you, I don't know, I'm asking, because I'd be surprised to hear this. I assume you don't believe that the clerk in Kentucky who refuses to sign the marriage licenses, I assume you don't believe she should have the right to stymie the constitutional rights that the Supreme Court has determined are inherent in the people who want to get married.
Well, my feeling is that if you cannot conscientiously, first of all, let's keep in mind, she's an elected clerk, okay? Or she is the clerk. She's not just an employee.
Yeah, she's the elect. She's okay. A government agent is what
right.
she is.
So there's a difference, I think, between somebody who is the clerk versus somebody who just happens to be working for the county. And when it comes to someone who is the clerk,
Who's working for the county, then they have a duty if you're a justice of the peace.
No. Somebody who's making, just barely above minimum wage is struggling to feed her family because the county may
So you're saying that a clerk, not the clerk, but say an assistant to Kim Davis,
yeah.
it has a a man and woman come into her office and say, we'd like you to issue us a marriage license. You're the assistant. You have the right. Let's say they do. You know, Davis has signed them, but she can issue the license to them. And she says, well, I know you two, and you're fornicators, and you're also divorced. She says to the woman, you've been divorced. And I know that you didn't get absolution from the priest. So
right.
Therefore, you are not. I cannot allow you two to get married.
Well,
so I will not
reassign her to the building department. She's a clerk, for crying out loud.
Oh well, I mean, she refuses to do it in that moment. Is she not lying?
Well, I know, but
is she not denying?
Just forget
about being reassigned.
No, she should be. She should be reassigned if that's her feeling.
No, but she says, I don't want to be reassigned. I like my job, and I don't, and I believe that.
What if
Kim Davis refuses to reassign her? She says, I'm not going to reassign her.
Well, she should reassign her.
Okay. Well, I'm just making the point that
when you're talking about an employee, you're talking about somebody who needs to be reassigned.
Do you view a distinction between refusing to allow a divorced woman to get married to another person? Do you view any distinction between that based on religious grounds and refusing to allow two men to get married based on religious grounds, or do you think they're identical?
Well, in my religion, they're identical. They're both wrong, you know.
Okay.
So I honestly don't know to what extent.
Well, wait, what's wrong? Both the divorced woman marrying another man and the two men getting married are in both your views
right.
wrong. So
right.
then the clerk is on solid ground refusing both of them a license. Is that your view?
Well, I think that she has a right to ask. She doesn't have a right to sit there and not do the job that she's been assigned to do. What she has the right to do in that circumstance is say, I would like to be assigned to another department.
Sure. I think we could. I think that we would hope
okay,
they would accommodate that. I would hope
yeah,
that.
Right.
I would hope so.
Yeah, you could accommodate that.
But in the moment, until she's...
This is another story, obviously.
Until she's reassigned, I think she's got to do her job.
No. You can't make people. It doesn't take that long to reassign somebody. You just send them over to the.
Well, I don't see why.
Sony department, or if she works for the clerk, most places she could take civil filings or criminal filings, for crying out loud. She could go over and work on the court side.
I agree with all that, but
you don't.
But
no,
that's sort of like saying to a cop.
No,
that's
no,
but
you
what
don't
your
don't
view
that.
Is like saying to a cop. A cop goes to a sergeant and says, "You know, I'm getting really close to the edge. I just can't take it anymore. All the sleaze that I rub up against every day, the filth. I can't stand it. I'm starting to lose it." And the sergeant says, well, I'll tell you what, you know, Jones, I will reassign you as soon as I can. I understand you're stressed out, but I need you tonight. It's a Friday night. Schools are out. There's going to be a lot going on in the streets. I just cannot give you leave tonight. So Jones out, and then Jones shoots somebody in the back. Jones is responsible for that, even though he has to be reassigned. He still violated the civil rights of the person he murdered. Well, it's the same thing as the clerk who violates the civil rights of the people who come in to get married, and she says, no, I won't allow you to for religious reasons.
Here's the thing. There's also the civil right that's specifically mentioned in the Constitution, and that is the First Amendment. And the very first right that is mentioned in the very first amendment of the Bill of Rights is the right to religious freedom. And, you know,
Well, she's free to go to any church she wants.
That has to be respected. That has to be respected. I know you don't like it. I know you don't like the fact that people practice a religion that you don't agree with.
No, that's not true. Jack, she can go to any church she wants. There are some churches I look at askance.
You get to practice any religion you want. And the only reason why you're saying this is because it's buttoned up against something that you're in favor.
Jack, you work for the the state of Kentucky. No, we're for a county. You have to observe the Constitution. You can't deny people their civil rights based on your religious viewpoint.
This whole thing is liberal hypocrisy at its peak. Here's the thing.
You don't even believe what you're saying. Go ahead.
You don't believe what you're saying.
Of course I do. Of course I do. I may not like a Pentecostal church, but I'm not saying people can't go.
There was a employment division case where Justice Scalia, in the majority opinion, basically gutted the First Amendment with respect to religious freedom when he said that it was okay to fire somebody for participating in the Native American Church's peyote ritual, and that those people who were so fired would not be able to collect unemployment because it was a violation of the law, whether their religion was in favor of it or not. And the thing is that at the time when that decision came down, there was a mass outrage, and it was kind of funny because if you read that decision, it was the conservative justices that were in favor of restricting religious freedom, and it was the liberal justices that were outraged at the decision. They were in the minority at that time. And in response to that, the first RFRA, the first Religious Freedom of Restoration Act, was passed by Congress in response to that because it was outrageous. And the thing is that, and so the liberals said, yeah, that's right. They were all back and behind that, and Bill Clinton signed it. Okay, well, now what happens is when the Christians want to start asserting their religious freedom, then all of a sudden everybody's against, on the liberal side, everybody is against the RFRA, the very same thing that they were in favor of and promoting before. And because it doesn't have anything to do with who has religious freedom or anybody's civil rights, and has everything to do with whose ox is being gored, and that's it. So I don't respect the liberal position on this at all, because it's hypocritical, and it is not based on constitutional rights, but simply upon social engineering and agendas. You don't get to do that. People have a right to their religion, and they don't have just, and that doesn't stop.
All right, in the original RFRA cases that you're talking about, it wasn't a balancing test. It wasn't a situation where one person is asserting the right to deny, the religious right, asserting the freedom to deny another person their constitutional rights. Smoking peyote or wearing a yarmulke, that doesn't affect anybody else. But when a government employee refuses to discharge her duties and by so refusing denies another person her rights, that is where the religious freedom ends, Jack. And I don't know why you have trouble with that one.
Well, the reason why I have trouble with that is because as you're not looking at it objectively, what happens is that I've already told you what the remedy is. The classic test for religious freedom.
I'm fine with that. You want to move her out? You want to pull? You want you look? You want to have her work for the dog catcher? That's fine. Go on.
The compelling state interest test was that included. Can the state affect its interest another way? And in the case of just an employee of the county, the employee of the state, they can't do that by transferring someone. There is no need, no reason to force somebody to do something that's against their religion.
Until she does get transferred, her legal duty is to go ahead.
She's got a constitutional right, whether
no,
she
not. Does not.
Yes,
you
she
are
does.
False. False.
Okay, where is it? Where does it talk about? Where does it mention the right to marriage in the Constitution? You got the Constitution up on your computer screen?
No, you have a right. There's a federal right to be married. The Supreme Court just said it. The Supreme Court just said there's a constitutional right. I don't need to show you your chapter and verse.
But it's not an enumerated right of the Bill of Rights.
Oh, so now some rights are more equal than other rights? Is that it, Jack?
The Supreme Court has said The Supreme Court has said that there is a right to be married. The Supreme Court has also
I don't see how.
Right to religion.
Why do you see, Jack? Let me change gears a little bit.
There
here.
Shouldn't be a conflict of religion.
Why do you see? Why do
you're
you see?
The conflict
why do you see the requirement that the clerk sign off on a gay marriage, on a two women getting married? Why do you see that as conflicting with her religious beliefs? How is there any conflict?
Because it depends on what her religion is.
Would it conflict with yours? Would it conflict with yours to sign off on it? No, I'm asking you. Would it conflict with yours? You just said that for your religion, marriage is between a man and woman, right? So if you were a clerk, would you say, well, if I sign this, that means I'm violating my religion?
Honestly, I don't know if on a personal level, if I would feel that way. But I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about...
Well, but so everyone gets to decide for... No matter how absurd it is?
It doesn't matter what my religious belief is, if it would or would not violate my religion.
Well, yes, it does, because you're... Well, you're just saying it depends on the individual.
It matters as to the clerk herself whether it violates.
Well, I agree. If the clerk can't do her job, she can quit or she can ask to be reassigned. But until she's reassigned, I don't.
No, you want see because you want see. This is the.
No, I don't want any. I want people.
This is the problem with liberals, because at the end of the day, they're not talking about rights. They're talking about coercion.
Jack.
You want to coerce somebody to fit your social agenda. And that's all there is.
No,
there is no reason why these rights need to be in conflict.
No.
But you want there to be a conflict because you want.
I don't want there to be a conflict.
And that is,
no.
And that is
here's what I want, Jack. I want two people who are adults and who are legally entitled to get married. To be able to get married. That's all.
There's
I
nothing
want.
That's good. But one single solitary clerk in one single solitary office. I'm not talking about the woman who's been in the news because she's the clerk and she was setting policy. But we're arguing right now about a low level employee that you want to coerce, that you want to endanger her job, because at the end of the day, liberals don't really care about low level employees.
I don't want to endanger her. I don't want to endanger her. Wrong.
They're more concerned about their
Jack,
social
I don't want to endanger her job. I want
yes,
her to do her job.
Yes, you do.
No, that's look. There's lots of people who are low level employees.
Yeah.
If they don't do their job, they get fired. It sucks,
yeah,
but they get fired. But I'll tell you what I would do. She refuses to do her job, and she gets fired. I'd make sure her family had health care. I'd make sure they had enough to eat. I wouldn't allow some bank to evict her from her home, at least without all sorts of procedures to protect her.
How about you show some actual compassion and realize that that these rights don't need to conflict?
What compassion am I supposed to show for the low-level clerk? The low-level clerk is using his office to deny two people who want to get married their right to do so.
It doesn't even qualify as an office. It's just a job that this person.
Whatever. Has. Okay.
And so what you're doing is you know they were you know one day their job didn't conflict with their religion and the next day their job did conflict with their religion, and so now all of a sudden they're confronted with something where they don't feel like they can do this conscientiously, and so they put in for a transfer, and so
let's move on. It's 11:30. Okay. I'd love to keep you going because we got another half hour of showtime. You've never recoiled against more conversation. 844-4-LG, call in 844-367-4254. Great chat here with Catholic Jack. So Jack, let's move on to the election. And I focus almost exclusively here. Many people don't like it. They want me to talk about the Republicans. I just think of them as a clown car, as a joke. I don't give them much airtime. I really don't. It's just not worth it to me. I've got better things to do. There's one candidate that I believe is for all Americans. His name is Bernie Sanders. I support him. What do you think? Are you aware of, maybe you don't even know about this, the negative now the mudslinging coming from the Clinton campaign from David Brock of Media Matters? Are you aware of this?
What's he doing?
Sent out this email to various people on his list warning about Bernie Sanders, how he has said kind things about Jeremy Corbyn, the new Labour leader in the UK, and linking through Corbyn Sanders to anti-Israel, pro, or allegedly anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, pro-Hezbollah statements, sending this to funders, Jewish funders, you know, Jewish supporters of Clinton, I guess, in New York, and also claiming that, I guess, Sanders is a supporter of the Chavez family, and specifically Hugo Chavez when he was the president of Venezuela, because Corbyn said some nice things about Chavez. And at one point back in 2006, Sanders supported a plan which was actually implemented whereby Citgo, the state-owned, Venezuela state-owned oil company, provided inexpensive heating oil to New Englanders when the price had spiked.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
So the deal is that David Brock, a close ally who runs Correct the Record, a super PAC that does, in fact, plan with Clinton strategy, has now sent out this email linking linking by association Bernie Sanders to Hamas, Hezbollah, and Chavez.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, what, who believes a politician?
Well, I'm just asking you, what's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction is the politicians lie. You know, of course they do. And, you know, and of course this sort of thing was going to happen. And, you know, there was going to come a point when Bernie Sanders was too strong to ignore, and the Clinton campaign was going to start doing that very sort of thing. So I'm not surprised by it, and I'm surprised that dirtier tricks haven't been played so far.
All right,
I'm waiting to see what's going to happen next.
All right, let me get Carl in Nashville on. Hold on, Carl, I got you. Just one sec. I want to get Carl's comment as well. So, Carl, good morning. You have a comment, question, concern for Jack or me or both of us? Go ahead.
Well, both, more toward you than Jack. I mean, I've learned in my 30 years of paying attention to politics that when you argue with a conservative, it's like arguing with a waterfall. you're not going to change their mind. You know, me and you will have conversations where we disagree, and we'll, for the most time, we'll come to a common ground and you'll see my point. They will never see your point. Never. Absolutely never. Imagine if a guy who's a Hindu, says, you know, I don't want to give gun permits because, you know, it's against my religion to kill. Or if a Christian says, I don't want to give gun license permits anymore because my Bible said thou shalt not kill. And too many people are being killed by guns. They would go just absolutely bats, you know what, over that. And you're just not going to get anywhere with Jack. I mean, he's not going to move.
I got to tell you what, I got to tell you what, you can in a second, but Carl, I think your point is outstanding. And I'm disappointed because Jack he's pretty far to the left on most issues, Carl, but you're right. He ain't going to move on this one. He's not going to move off the dime on this one. Go ahead, Jack. Respond, please.
Well, okay. See, the thing is that the very fact that you phrase the issue that way is indicative of the fact, sir, that you don't really understand the point that I'm trying to make, and that is that I'm not talking about somebody who goes to the sheriff's department where they register guns and then decides, okay, well, I'm not registering guns even though I joined the sheriff's department. I'm talking about a situation where somebody finds themselves in a situation where the law has changed and this situation is something that they can't religiously comply with, and they talk about asking for a transfer at that point. I'm not saying
now,
that a person...
Now how?
Let me finish, Carl. I'll get you back, though.
Yeah, and the point is that my point that I'm making is that if you've got two rights declared by the Supreme Court that run into conflict, they don't have to conflict when you can make accommodations for the individual employee. And that is a reasonable position. The fact that you are unwilling to even consider an accommodation is indicative of the fact that you're not really respecting rights, but rather respecting an agenda. And I think that in a constitutional society, in a pluralistic society, that's something that ultimately results in A, coercion, and B, something that really is ultimately detrimental to public peace.
All right, let me get your final word in, Carl, and I got a question for
okay.
you. Go ahead.
Well, how you see what I effectively done? Conservatives don't like hypotheticals.
Well, you know, he's not really conservative, though. To be fair to Jack, he's not a conservative except on religious issues, but he is pretty conservative
They tend not to like hypotheticals until it's pointed at them. But that's a perfect hypothetical. This is the absolute same thing.
I agree. But I don't think Jack would oppose. I think to be fair, Jack would say that a clerk who refused to give a gun license, are you using an anvil or something? Who's making horseshoes? It sounds like somebody's got a hammer and an anvil. All right, so I think he would say that, you know, if you refuse to give a license to somebody who applies for one, then you should get reassigned. I think that would be his view.
What was your question that you have for me now?
So I know you get – go ahead,
John. I'm not saying that one religious right is more important than the other. If somebody has an objection religiously to giving gun licenses out, then that person should be reassigned as well.
All right. So here's my –
all due respect, sir, that's exactly what you're saying. You're saying that one set of constitutional laws –
yeah, he's saying, okay, so I guess Carl's saying that the religion, the freedom of religion, let's let this go, because I think we've hashed this out.
Yes.
But here's my question for you, Carl. Carl, you've gotten on me a little bit, I kind of backed off, which I appreciate for my criticism of Clinton, which has continued unabated. But I wonder, do you find it problematic? Jack seems to kind of slough it off. Politics happens. Of course, there's going to be negative campaigning. How do you feel about this email sent out by David Brock, the Clinton supporter, going after Bernie?
Just what we talked about the other day, I'm going to give you a perfect example. In my business, I have a metal recycling business, and one of the guys that I sell metal to, actually I sell tires to, and I get the metal back. He has a Confederate flag flying over his business here in Nashville, which is, to me, perfectly legal, and that's where it should be. If you want it on your private property, then that's where it should be. Now, am I a sympathizer of the Confederacy because I do business with a man who has a Confederate flag? No, that's
not quite the same.
Hear my point here.
Yeah.
And the point is this right here. For someone to try and use guilt by association through dirty political tactics, people see through that, and it's politics.
Do you think it's going to hurt her?
No, it's not. It's not going to hurt Bernie. It's not going to hurt Hillary. It's politics, and politics aren't beanbags. Why have problems when politicians?
Then
do
why do you
like
think
Trump,
if you don't right? think it's going to? Yeah, I think you're being
it's
a little
politics,
too forgiving.
Man.
I really do. I think
no,
this is bad stuff.
Because
she's helping,
because
you get it mad at me for helping the Republicans, right? Which is what you say
right.
I'm doing. But isn't that what Brock is doing here? Isn't he helping the Republicans? Isn't do the dirty work for them by going after Sanders?
Yeah, it's politics. There's a difference. When you go on day on and day out, about Hillary, that's one thing. They're going back
okay.
and forth. They're
that's
trying
a fair
to,
distinction.
One of them trying to become the Democratic
fair.
Nomination within the two camps. They're going to shoot at each other.
I hear you.
He's going to hit Hillary. Hillary's going to hit him.
I just don't think he's done that, though.
O'Malley has been doing the biggest hit, but he's so far down, nobody's been paying attention. And he has an excellent point of we need more debates on the Democratic side.
He's right about that. Carl, I appreciate the call. Let me let you go. I got
no
John
problem.
Calling in too. Good call from Carl. John, hold on a sec. Let me get you on.
Okay.
I think one point that Carl made is true. I go on pretty much every day criticizing Hillary Rodham Clinton, and this is just one example from David Brock, but that said, I try to be really, really accurate. I'm not playing guilt by association games, but that's exactly what Brock did. This goes beyond the pale in my view. It should not be allowed. All right, do you have any, Jack, you don't really, again, you, now have you chosen a candidate yet, or are you just going to vote for whoever the Democrat is, even though you can't stand their views on choice, on abortion?
Well, obviously, I can't vote for anybody on the Republican side that they're putting out. So yeah, that's probably going to happen. But I, you know, my only real interest is Bernie Sanders. That's really all I.
So, yeah, but, so then why aren't you outraged by this dirty trick from David Barr?
I didn't say I wasn't outraged. I just said I expect it.
Okay. All
you
right.
know, I mean, I know that this is, I'm outraged by politics in general.
Okay.
Okay.
But you don't know, you think Bernie's run a pretty clean campaign all in all? I mean, I think he deserves a lot of credit. Yeah.
Of course he has. Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, he's a sincere man. And that's why I'm behind him. I'm not behind him because I agree with him on everything.
No, I know you don't.
But you agree with him
on the economic stuff. I mean, you
well, sure, but
yeah.
Well, actually, well, not entirely. I mean, he wants to break up banks. I'm more for a more central bank with more control rather than having the banking system become even more chaotic than it is.
Well, you want a government bank. That's what you want.
Yeah, in essence, yes.
All right. What do you think, John? Hold on one more sec. I want to ask Jack one more question because he's being so generous with his time. So, Jack, and by the way, the website, ChristianDemocracyMagazine.com, where Jack writes. He's a great writer. He writes about the issues we talk about on the show, and he does a really nice job at ChristianDemocracyMagazine.com. So Jack, with regard to... now I lost my thread. Oh, yeah, free college education. So Bernie's calling for state colleges and universities to have free tuition. And I'm just curious, I would assume you do support that.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's
my reasoning for why I don't totally support it. Because the college education provides the recipient with huge benefits. And I think it is appropriate for them to pay for those benefits. Now, many can't afford to. And so I like the system in Oregon where you pay after the fact. We've been through this before. I'm not necessarily against – I don't think you should have to pay up front if you can't afford it. But I do think you should have to pay in some way back to the country that gives
well,
you the free
education. Here's an argument against what you're saying, and that is that, you see, it puts our nation at a competitive disadvantage versus other places
that have free education.
Well,
okay, but then I would say again, we have great schools here. Some countries that provide free education don't necessarily provide as good education, and you have less of an incentive to maximize the value you get from your education if you don't pay for it. Those are conservative arguments. I don't know if I totally buy them. But again, I think if you do derive a significant benefit from your college degree, then shouldn't you pay something back? And there's all sorts of responsibility being a higher tax bracket. Well, but why not? But why shouldn't you pay directly for the education after, at least after that?
Because why do you have to?
Here's the Washington
Post. You have to pay taxes anyway.
Or here's the Washington Post answer. Well, this gets to be a little bit angels on the head of a pin, but I still think it's appropriate for there to be some sort of direct payment back to the state that educated you. But the Washington Post argument is that Sanders isn't progressive because what he proposes would be a boondoggle for the rich and for upper middle class people who can easily afford tuition, and yet he's saying that they shouldn't have to pay either if they send their kids to, say, the University of Virginia or University of Michigan.
Well, you can't just – of course it's going to be free for everybody, rich and poor, but then that turns it into a merit-based system, which is eminently more fair than one that's based on your ability to finance.
Well, and then there's another point, Jack, is that if you have very high, if you have high and progressive tax rates, then the super rich won't really be that rich, and they will also benefit in the sense that it will be meaningful to them to have a bit of a free education for their kids.
They're grasping at straws and stuff like
that.
It's
ridiculous.
No
I agree. It's an absurd argument. Yeah. I'm glad, and you made a good point too there, Jack. I like that. It makes it meritocratic. It's everyone who can go, and the person who's got the best grades and demonstrates the most aptitude and achievement will be the ones who go to college, not those who can afford it. John, you're up. Go ahead. Thanks for holding, by the way.
Hey, good morning. I called to be a troublemaker.
Go ahead. You always are. We appreciate it.
Jack says your mom wears combat boots. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, I saw an interesting meme on Facebook, and I don't really know much about this, but the argument was that churches should not pay taxes because technically they're nonprofit, and they, oh, what was the other, the second point that they made? Anyway, my thoughts were that if a church, you know, engages in political activity, should they lose their nonprofit status? You know, if a preacher is, like, speaking out against abortion, should they lose their nonprofit status even though, say, well over 50% of their money goes to the poor or whatever? You know that little IRS guideline that they go by where if more than half of your funding is going to some sort of charity of some sort, then you're technically a nonprofit. And I just wanted to hear you guys go back and forth on that.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I look, the priest has to pay taxes. This Catholic Church, they have so much valuable real estate. On the other hand, you know, I'd hate to see it all taxed, and then those beautiful churches might have to be sold off, and I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on this one.
I don't know that they don't have to pay property taxes. You're talking about what the, you're talking about their exemption as nonprofits under the IRS code. And, you know, I mean, the thing is that they're nonprofits, just like other nonprofits. There's religious nonprofits and there's non-religious nonprofits. And what is, with respect to almost all nonprofits, the rule is that you can advocate with respect to issues, you just can't advocate for candidates. If the restriction was lifted, as it were, and the churches had to start paying taxes again, then what you would end up with is a situation where churches could actually advocate for candidates.
You know, a lot of preachers, though, pastors, ministers, they go up in their pulpits and they very, very loudly endorse candidates.
Yeah, I've not seen that happen directly, but if they do, then that's a violation of the nonprofit.
And by the way, churches do. The property taxes are, of course, assessed by states and local governments. And according to procon.org, which is not pro-conservative, because I was like, pro-con, I guess they're for conservatives because they're pro-con. It's actually explore pros and cons of controversial issues. So pro-con says that every state in the District of Columbia exempts church from paying property tax. So in our neighborhood where, you know, real estate values are pretty high, you've got several churches, and they're sitting on land that's probably worth a few million dollars. They're not paying any tax every year. I'm paying, you know, my...
Is that true in California? Because I don't know.
Says every state in all 50 states in District of Columbia. There's a synagogue across the Connecticut Avenue from where I live. I think that's on about 3 acres of land, at least. It's a big plot. That land is probably worth, $5 million. So how come they're not paying $50,000 every year to the city, to the county?
They
should be.
They are or the state. Not.
Well, I know they're not because they're exempt according to this website.
Well, that's District of Columbia. Property taxes are state, Al.
No. All 50 U.S. states and the District of Columbia exempt church from paying property taxes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, well, then it's, you know, there's no constitutional right to be exempt from taxes. So people are just going to have to decide.
Change the law. Maybe we should change the law.
You know, if they want to do that. But the thing is that by exempting churches from, you know, the people that are most in favor of removing the tax exemption from churches are also the people that are most vocal against churches taking any public position on issues that, you know, where they oppose the church's position on it. And so the thing is by removing the nonprofit status of churches and requiring them to pay taxes, they're going to lose all ability to restrict their speech. So you can't have one without the other.
All right, where do you come down on this, John? You know, I got to just say one last thing before I made the point, let you go. So I mentioned we have pretty – he just left us. That's too bad. I wanted to ask him. So let me make this point. So I said, you know, you got these pretty churches, you got cathedrals, and they're really attractive. And, you know, I feel bad, like, you start taxing, what if they sell off the land and someone puts up a condo? It's kind of, you know, it's not what I want. But then we've got this hideous Mormon church, this ugly thing. It looks like the from the Emerald City or something. And it just stands out. You see it for miles around. It's an eyesore of the worst kind. And again, they've got a lot of land, and it's valuable real estate. Why the hell shouldn't they have to pay taxes on that, Jack?
Well, you can't say the Mormons have to do it and the Catholics
don't. No, but if you, I agree. I mean, just because the Catholics have better taste when they hire architects, does that make it a... No, I'm with you. You can't distinguish.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what I'm saying is that you're going to have to make a policy choice. You know, do you want the money or, you know, but you can't have both. You can't have making churches pay taxes on the one hand and on the other hand restrict their advocacy in the public sphere.
Make them pay taxes and let them advocate all they want. I don't care. Fine. Go on TV and say that you think you should vote for, you know, whoever, Trump. Trump is a man of God. You want to say that? Fine. Go ahead. I don't care. You just have to pay taxes.
All right. Well, you know, that's a decision.
But here's the thing. I don't mind if the preacher says that. Where I have a problem is where the church uses its money, this organization, to back a candidate. I mean, I think that's a problem.
Well, except then, you know, you're going to have to decide what you're going to do then.
Well, we let corporations contribute to candidates, don't we? They create these super PACs.
Well, actually, corporations can't actually contribute to campaigns. Okay? That's a misunderstanding.
Well, there are CEOs who get paid millions of dollars.
Right.
They do, and they often use, from the corporation, and they often use... the corporate treasury to create issue ads and advocacy ads. I hear them all the time.
There's a specific kind of nonprofit that's allowed to do that, but
it's a shell company. Hold on a sec, John. You called back. I wanted your opinion. John, I did want to know what you thought about. Well, first of all, should we take away that tax exemption that you just asked about for churches and synagogues?
Yeah. So my response would have been, and that was a drop call, by the way. I didn't hang up.
No worries. No worries.
My response would have been that I'm not sure that the restrictions that we have on them, where they can advocate issues but not individual candidates. I'm not sure that that's effective at all, because I think the general population can basically figure out who they're an advocate for by where they are on the issues. And then the other thing is that if you tax the churches, they will only really be able to spread their message inside, you know, their chapel. They won't have the money like the Latter-day Saints did to go out and with their position on like Prop 8, because they dumped a lot of money into it. That would have inhibited their ability to, you know, go as far with that as they did if they had to pay taxes.
Yeah. See, that's the flip side of it, Jack. You're saying you can't limit churches' political activity if you take away their tax exemption. John's saying, well, they've got all their flesh with money because they're not paying taxes, and that allows them to be more politically active.
Well, see, I don't take a strong position on it one way or the other. The only time that I would object to not allowing a tax exemption would be if, say, for example, if you were going to tax churches or synagogues or what have you, my position would be then, okay, fine, but you should let them develop a charitable arm, like, say, Catholic Charities, that's devoted completely to charitable things, and allow a tax exemption for that. Because if you're going to just say, okay, we're going to allow non-religious nonprofits to have a tax exemption, but not religious nonprofits, then I think you run into an equal protection problem.
All right, and John, I got you back, so let me move on. What did you think, or move back, really? What's your thought on the negative campaigning by David Brock working with Hillary Clinton?
I heard you talking about that a little bit. Is he he is her, he's doing like hit pieces on Bernie or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
That's right.
And then she, as you've discussed this before, she's using proxies instead of directly coming out and doing it herself.
I don't know.
I think the more I find out about her, the less I like her. I think she's just underhanded and seedy and I will, if she gets the nomination, I will very reluctantly vote for her.
Is this going to hurt her? Do you think this will hurt her? Because some of my callers are saying, well, you know, everybody does this. This is politics as usual. So, yeah, it's not going to hurt her. And people don't believe the slurs either, so it isn't going to hurt Bernie either. Is that where you come down on this?
I don't think it's going to hurt Bernie because his fans are diehard. I think he's getting a lot of word of mouth, publicity, but I think it will hurt her. I think anything she does at this point, I mean, she's under a lot of scrutiny for a lot of other things, and I think being viewed in a negative light, I mean, she's bleeding out her support right now. It's going down, not up. So, I think she has more to lose by doing that. I think she should start, stop, you know.
Well, it has a whiff of desperation, doesn't it? It really does. I mean, it looks like she's starting to worry. Oh, my gosh, we could have another 2008 on our hands where Obama, you know, I could lose again. That's sort of how it looks, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, she knows it. I think that she started realizing that a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, the poll numbers weren't good. They're bouncing back a little bit. She's had some better numbers lately, but nothing like what she had, you know, 2 months ago or even 1 month ago, John.
Yeah, and I think things start to change once they get that first opportunity to debate. I think that's when we start seeing the numbers moving against her again, because even if Bernie doesn't attack her, I know a few of those other candidates will. And Bernie will show that he's better than that. I just think that the chemistry in those debates is going to be perfect for Bernie. I think there's no way he can come out a loser from the debates, that he will get more support.
Yeah, that's
so, and she's worried about that.
It sounds good. Sounds right, actually. Sounds very plausible. Sounds correct. All right, John, great call. Thanks. We got to let you go. Jack, we're going to let you go in a moment. I want your final words, though, but Christian Democracy Magazine is where you can read more from and about and by and what Jack – are you the editor, so you choose what goes – are you the king of Christian Democracy Magazine?
Well, I'm the editor, and we have a number of good writers that –
Well, would you say you're the prince then? I mean, what exactly, if you gave yourself some kind of a title, some kind of medieval, you know, ranking, would you be a duke? I mean, where do you
chief cook and bottle washer.
All right, so you're kind of being, call yourself king. What the heck? It's good to be the king, Jack.
I'll let you indulge in that for a little bit. Just think about it. But you're the king of your show, right?
I am. Sometimes I say to my kids that, you know, you're, I'll say to them, you're a prince, but I'm the king, or sometimes they call them a peasant. Either way, it doesn't really matter. As long as, you know, in the hierarchy, I come first. That's all that really matters.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's good. I'll let you enjoy that and, you know, say it in the mirror a few times.
It's about the only thing. I've got this little fiefdom here. It's not so large, but hey, it's mine. Jack, great call, as always. Great talking to you. I learned so much.
Right.
I'll talk to you next month.
Nice talking to you.
Jack,
yep.
In Michigan.
Another month.
There he goes. Jack in Michigan, and that's going to do it for me. Let's try to get right on over to, we'll see how this works. We're going to try to get right on over to Radio Monterey. Again, we thank them so much for their support. RadioMonterey.com, the home of shows for the open mind. I truly appreciate, of course, the great support that they have offered me over the years. So here is, we'll see if we get the stream, and if not, well, you know what, we'll I'll get you there one way or the other.